311.
And a very good afternoon to you. It's Sunday afternoon, and of course, it's time for the 311 radio show. I know usually your host is Krista J. Paul, and it's not Krista J. with the deepest sounding voice. Dennis J. back in the chair after a long break, but it's good to see some faces that I'm fairly familiar with and one face that I'm not that familiar with. But I'm sure once you hear the voices, you'll be able to identify them as they go along. We have our fire and safety officers with us. I see Natasha that I remember well and Jason that I also recall. And there's a third person. I'm not sure whether he's the runner, the driver, or the associate. So I'll say good afternoon to you, sir, and allow you to introduce yourself first to me and then the public. I'm Dennis, and you are?
Good afternoon, Fire and Life Safety Officer Kevin Sobers.
So Sobers, great to have you with us. I can call you Kevin because I'm familiar with the other two. They've taken me through several safety and fire prevention things that I've learned over the years. What are we going to talk about today? It's the summer holiday. Summer has been an extended holiday and lockdown. We've been through ash fall. We've been through COVID, self-isolation. But it's summertime for some. And I see children going to the beach and coming back. So I remember August and September used to be like. What's happening in September that we need to be careful about?
So yes, it is September. Yes, we have children going to the beach. We still have those families that are still fortunate to have a job and parents going out to work, being left in some cases home alone, unsupervised. And we're asking and begging to parents, be mindful when you're leaving your children alone, those who are underage, and you know that they can't be responsible for using the kitchen wisely or effectively. Make sure you leave something that they can probably just put in the microwave to warm up. But even with microwave, we still need to be mindful because if you're using things like aluminum, that can also still pose a problem. Again, those children who know they live close to the beach, we know we have this tendency of mommy's not at home, so we can stray and go down by the beach. And most cases, we have summers that end in some sort of tragedy, some person not making it back home. So we're just asking children, you know, you need to be also responsible for yourself. You need to listen to your parents' advice. They're not saying anything to you that is wrong. If they say, don't go, don't go. At some point in time, when they have time, they'll be able to take you down there so that you can have a fun day.
How early is too early? Let me ask this. How early is too early? Because sometimes parents will say, I don't want my children around the stove. I don't want my children around the microwave. But you know, as a mother, and I know as a father, they go where they're not supposed to go. So they climb up sometimes and try to reach things, and then they get into trouble. They're forgetful. They're doing schoolwork on their laptops, but they decide to leave it on the bed and go to perhaps, you know, get something in the kitchen. But get something in the kitchen becomes go to the bathroom, becomes get into something else. And the laptop is on the bed and it's hot and they just forget about it. So there are times that, yes, you know, but in the midst of being young and whatever it is, you get distracted.
So what it is basically for me, it is practice. Practice getting the children into a routine, doing the things that you want them to do while they're in your presence. Chances are when you keep doing it over and over, that now becomes the new norm, the new habit for them that you want them to develop.
Okay.
Take the mystery out of certain things for children. If you want your child to be able to use the stove effectively, stand in the kitchen with that child and show them how to use it. Mm-hmm. Don't turn on the gas first and then be there fidgeting, trying to get the
matches or the lighter.
Exactly. Go through the correct procedure, ensure that you can see them doing it. You have to trust children. They have to grow. Mm-hmm. My daughter is of the age now. And I said to my mother recently, you know what? I need her to be a little more responsible, to be a little bit more independent. So she has to learn to start cooking at some point in time because there come in a time that I can say, no, pot turn over, you do something.
Right.
So it's about teaching her when you're there doing it, have the child there with you that they can see and they can partake until they build up their confidence. And not only them building confidence, but you as a parent, you also begin to feel less stressed. You know what? Okay, yes, she's able to fry an egg. She's able to boil potatoes at this point in time and monitor them again with the laptop. If you're not supplying that child with a
cooler. Cooler, yeah.
for not providing that, then don't have the child sitting on the bed doing schoolwork using a laptop or a tablet. Mm-hmm. If they have to sit on the floor, sit on the floor. If they have to sit on a table outside, then again, go ahead and do that. But do not allow them to sit on the bed. They can fall asleep once you become too comfortable within the environment.
True.
And not only children become distracted, we as adults, we also become distracted with everything that's going on around us. Mm-hmm. So practice these things now, and you would recognize that it becomes habit. And then you take to yourself, you know what? All right, shoot. I used to do this before. There's a reason I'm not doing it. If you have to remind yourself, get pictures of house fires. Stick up around the home. I don't want this to be my circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you this because usually they say most of these things happen at home. And I know you guys have lots of calls from time to time. I hear the engines sometimes before I see them. Is there a peak time in the year when you get more of these things happening? Either of you guys find, you know, you have peak periods where more house fires occur. I know you get grass fires from time to time when it's hot. And right now, it's real hot. I don't know. This kind of heat is a strange kind of heat. But is there a peak time where, you know, either it's people home, either people leaving their homes unattended, but you get more calls? Or do you get prank calls? Let me ask you this, because here at work, during the summer, we know when children are on holiday. The phone rings and some little voice that sounds like they're about 3 years old asking about their granny and then hanging up the phone or laughing at you or asking what's the number for the madhouse and all sorts of strange things. And don't laugh. I'm going to get you to come and sit here, especially when we're doing brass tacks. They just call. So is there a peak time for this kind of thing? Are we in the peak of this season?
You asked a couple of questions. Let me first
get... So let's walk back, yeah.
That is a definite. You get some children calling and want to speak to daddy. Who's daddy? Definitely not a far off. But they just, you know, sometimes they're little ones, sometimes they're bigger ones. And the unfortunate part of that is that I've gotten a call already, and I'm sure my colleagues might have gotten such calls as well, where children actually were very abusive on the phone. They would call and say some very unkind things and literally curse and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Sad, but that's the reality of what we go through.
Mm-hmm.
And on to your other question in terms of peak period and
peak
so on.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, I can say to you that around the holiday season, what we call the Christmas period, mm-hmm. we do tend to have one or two mishaps. And I guess it has a lot to do with persons having more appliances plugged in around that time, Christmas lights, Christmas trees, etc. Mm-hmm. The hustle is on, persons are a lot busier. They're working longer hours, they come home from work tired, they're trying to prepare a meal even though they're tired, person fall asleep. These are things that happen during that period of time. So I would say that that is one of the times where we can be a little more cautious, and we as fire officers can expect a little peak sometimes mm-hmm. in house fire activity, unfortunately. Well, during the, what we would call the festival season, crop over and so forth, you would tend to have more of the vehicular accidents and so on, because obviously persons are out partying, they're drinking and drinking.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. So we tend to know certain times of the year to expect certain things. You will find New Year's is one of the times that we would get both house and you may have an accident or two.
Mm-hmm.
During the time where we have rally, you know, rally Barbados, we will find that persons would like to emulate some of what they see.
What is on the track.
Yes. But I would say to persons though, that what you saw on the track wasn't against oncoming traffic. And it doesn't only filter from what we call KR or so on, but persons, bike persons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we sometimes the bike men would say that we always on the case. The reality about it is persons pass me on motorbikes with the front wheel in the air, going towards oncoming traffic on the outside. You know, I don't have to say how dangerous that is. I think anyone with basic common sense can understand the dangers that are associated with that. So there are a number of things that happen during the year that would peak or would reduce our seasons of fire or emergency of some kind.
Yeah, and our house fire season normally starts mainly what we call from November.
Mm-hmm.
It's the period leading up to Independence when you do a lot of cooking and
cooking.
Up to that's the near the end of January, February. Yeah.
It's the things we like. We like conkeys, we like ham, we like the kitchen. But let me ask about prevention, because you're talking about the kitchen. So there must be steps, things we can do to ensure that our kitchens are safe. Because I know, for example, curtains blowing in the breeze close to the flames Well, I wouldn't advise, you know, that you have long curtains close to your stove, but sometimes that happens. But there are things like that that you can perhaps help the public with, just to remind them that, you know, you shouldn't do these things.
You just actually answered one of your questions, because right. you were saying
the curtain.
About some preventative measures, but you just give us one. We already having your curtains close to your
stove.
Even if you're a person, well, everybody who has listened to this show knows I don't like candles, but some persons love them.
Oh yes,
having your curtains close to somewhere you're going to light candles, mm-hmm. that is also
no.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we start to think that there's something elaborate that we need to do to prevent these things from happening. Mm-hmm. Simple, basic, good housekeeping practices mm-hmm. make the difference between something happening and something not happening.
So there are certain things, again, like cleaning the stove when you're finished with it.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking for preventative measures. And that is one, it is not something out of the box. Right. It is not allowing the grease to build up on the stove, that every time you go to the light, you know, it's like there's a potential that, oh my goodness, with all this cake on grease, we have the fire there. So at any time, anything can happen. Yeah. And I don't see why we would want to have curtains blowing over the stove. Now, when we say that, we can also say persons who are building their homes or renovating homes, you need to take into consideration that how you're going to set out your kitchen, how you're going to set up the kitchen. Some people just do things milly-willy and don't think about it. For example, I decide I want to have an island. Mm-hmm. I mean, not always would normally go in the middle of the kitchen.
Right.
And we're not thinking, well, am I using natural gas? Am I going to be using bottled gas? And it's only after this kitchen is finished, you say, oh dear, but I'm using the LPG cylinder. Right. So how am I going to now be able to get, if you will, to the stove or to the countertop or whatever? And versus, you know what, I don't want people to come and see a 20 or 25 pound cylinder at the side.
Right.
So you ask the carpenter now, can you put it inside the cupboard? And of course, that is a big no-no. If anything should happen, if there's a breakage within the hose,
right.
what is going to happen once that's inside the cupboard? All of that is going to accumulate in there. And as we said, we're working longer extended hours in some cases. So you leave home at, say, 6:30 the morning time. You're not getting back home until some cases. Some persons don't get home until 6:30 the evening, 7 o'clock in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And that constant buildup of fuel in there. You leave home when it was pretty bright. You come back home to the dark. What's the first thing you want to do? You flick the light on so you can see what is going on.
Right.
It is things like that that can cause an ignition source.
Right.
And then you have kaboom.
You know, the other thing is that, especially at around Christmas time, those who can afford to do so, especially if they have the small cylinders, they would sometimes have a spare one sitting down somewhere.
Exactly.
And it might be in another cupboard. And you know, the other thing I know, but this is from, I can raise my hand for that one. One of the things that she who must be obeyed, when we had that kind of thing, used to say is, take the cap off. But sometimes when you pull the cap off, if you don't pull it completely off, it's half depressed. So, you know, the gas is still escaping in there. And then you open the cupboards, you can smell gas escaping. Sometimes you don't pay attention to it, but yes, sometimes it does. The other thing is this. Two things that happened recently that's on my mind. Jason talked about accidents. We've had car fires of late, one or two of them. But the other thing is we had a couple of disturbing ones where houses were actually set on fire on purpose. And that worries me for a lot of reasons. Because in this case, I think you guys then have to deal with accelerants, persons in there. Does that present a special challenge to you when you get on the scene, when you don't know whether it's someone in the burning house or not?
Of course, it would present a challenge. Once we respond to any incident, especially if we hear a residential fire,
mm-hmm.
start to paint a picture from the time we get that call, what is going on? Okay. Of course, we rely on persons within the community. Was anybody in the house? Did everybody leave home? Can you tell us? And if persons suspect that some person was in that house, then the response goes from fire suppression to now search and rescue.
Right.
given that the conditions are conducive that officers can get into the building to do what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Now, we look at things on television and we would compare the, what is it, Station 19 and the show.
I'm glad you said that. Go ahead. Because people believe it's real and they expect you to do it.
Exactly, that you're going to rush in. And enemy, I think anybody who rushes in, not knowing what they're facing, is setting themselves up for death.
Yeah.
And a dead rescuer is no help to anyone. Yeah. So basically what we would do, once we have that intel, once we have that information, then we know how to proceed accordingly. Now, if you're saying in the cases of an accelerant being used, obviously the fire is not going to behave the way that in normal circumstances, just given the normal household load, it is going to accelerate on a totally different plane. Okay. It is going to be faster, the heat is going to be more intense than everything else. And officers obviously have to know what to do. We have a saying, we will risk a lot to save a lot. We will risk little to save. If this house is already beyond, where are we going to commit some person to go into? Because it looks good, Chicago fire, it's not going to look good for Barbados. This is Barbados we're talking about here. And reality, exactly. Yeah, in a fire situation, you cannot see your hand before your face. With these movies, you can see everything as plain as
We had a situation recently where there was a small fire in Bridgetown. I think they're still dealing with smoke. Do you guys have to go in after this to make sure, or is there another unit that does that? Because recently I saw they were still concerned about the lingering scent of smoke in the building. So that too becomes a hazard. Even after the fire has gone out, you may have smoke issues that you have to deal with, or smoldering, or sometimes it comes back up. Do you guys have to go back in cases like this to make sure all's there?
Yes, it is not just the case that we do the fire suppression and we
leave.
And that is the end of it. We go in, as you said, to have the fire, and we're still constantly keeping abreast of the situation, making sure that persons do not go into the area, that it is structurally sound and such. Like, we were there when we walked through. So he can tell you, we've gone in, we've said to persons, you know what, the smell of smoke is still very pungent in the ear. The best thing for you to do would be to open
on everything to let you
ventilate the room.
Which brings me to another thing. Some of our buildings, we don't pay attention to ventilations. We don't pay attention to windows being able to open. Wrought iron, we're afraid of thieves and, you know, we lock ourselves in. And you have a situation where I spoke to a friend of mine about this. Their bedroom windows are sealed. And there are houses where they even have wrought iron in the corridors to seal off the bedrooms for the rest of the house. So if you have a fire in the kitchen, and you have wrought iron sealing off and your windows are sealed, how do you get out? I mean, what do you do? So, I mean, as fire prevention officers, shouldn't, you know, people at least call you to ask you, can you help me here? What should I do here? Am I doing the right thing? Is this safe? Can they do that?
Of course, that's what we're here for. In most cases, when we make, oh, let's always tell you, because we had an experience like that up to this week. But when we come across cases like that, we would advise persons, you know what? There's nothing wrong with trying to secure yourself. But if you're going to go to the extreme where you're making yourself a prisoner within your own environment, and that is when you're using, as you said, these wrought iron bars that are screwed into
the wall,
in the event of an emergency, you cannot get out. Now, there are some persons who have built it with a
padlock.
Padlock, exactly. So,
but then they can't find the key. They're in a hurry.
So if they at least have one room where the padlock is there, it is not engaged.
Right.
So you can just take it out and you can open and you can make your escape. But for those ones now, and then they say that you don't know which room the fire is going to occur in.
Right.
But there's also another mechanism, which is called a fast release mechanism.
Okay.
There's no lock or anything on it. If anything is detected, you just go, you move the lever, do what you're, and you can get out. And it's safe because it doesn't allow an intruder to access your home. Either only you can operate that system. But for those persons who are not willing to comply, I would say make peace with God. If you know which funeral director you want to have your burial service with, make sure you have everything covered. Don't leave any financial difficulties for loved ones.
You're a difficult lady for a Sunday, you know, man. This is Sunday afternoon. You tell people make peace with their God. I'm sure they're rushing off to church and will not hear your good advice. Look, I remember you making this comment before. In one of the programs, I was listening on a Sunday, and you were talking, I thought, very clearly, and perhaps you should keep repeating it for those who haven't heard. Teach your children, your family, how to get out of the house. I remember you were talking about walking along the corners and feeling heat. See, I do remember, right? I mean, you know, I do remember. But no, learning how to get out, because there are times when, look, there's something called panic. I don't know if you ever panicked, but I'm sure at some point in your life, you know, the panic sets in. The stove, you know, you have something boiling on the stove and it boils over. The gas goes out. You don't realize it. You then try to light it back and suddenly realize gas is escaping. You hear the poof, you know, you jump back, you know, you run. You forget about everything. You don't remember which way is out of the kitchen. You know, the curtain starts to burn. Something starts to burn. You don't remember if it's the wet a towel and mop it down or whether it's just scream. You don't even remember it's 311 to call. You know, it's something with 11. You know, so how to manage the panic and getting, you know, people to go turn off the lights and find their way around the house or something you were saying. I just think, you know, it was great advice. You could pull it back up from out of the, you know, where you have it hidden in the phone or somewhere. While we pray.
You see, but that is something they probably will look at me stink right now, because that is something I always get and talk about. Exit drills in your home.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in exit drills in your home.
Good.
Regular practicing with your family, event that something happens. How are we going to get out? And when we get out, where are we going to go and assemble together?
Mm-hmm.
And for those listening, you probably heard it time and time again, but make sure before you even go and do the blindfolding and stuff, let your children know, have a little meeting, discuss with them in the event that something happens. This is what we will do. You will get on your hands and your knees, find the wall, get close to the wall, and you follow the wall to the nearest door, and you find your way out. Once you realize they are doing that effectively and efficiently, you can then go ahead and then decide, okay, this way is going to be blocked. If this way is blocked, how are you going to find an alternative exit to get out of the building?
Mm-hmm.
Once you've done that for three or so different exits,
mm-hmm.
then you can go ahead and proceed with doing the blindfold. Blindfold yourself, but blindfold the children and see how they do it at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take part of it and make it an exercise where everybody knows how to get out.
To do it. And hold each other's hands and make sure you know where everybody is, because the worst thing to do is suddenly realize, wait, we're missing somebody, and then turn to go back, because by then things could be further out of control, and now instead of losing one, you might lose two or three. You know, there's a really sad case I saw in the press recently where three children lost their lives because they couldn't get out. And that's why I raise that again, because, you know, I just think it's sad when we lose one life, but when we lose multiple lives, you know, I have to ask this question. Eh? People talk about COVID lockdown and mental health. How do you guys keep focused when you have to do this over and over and go into situations where, you know, you don't know what we will find, people losing all their possessions, they're crying, you know, and sometimes people screaming at you, why you can't save my house? That one burned already and spread. How do you manage working as a team and working through this all the time? Because you must depend on each other heavily.
As you said, it is a team effort. There is no I in team. That is the team basically from our junior fire cadet camp. Mm-hmm. That is their motto. There is no I in team. We are not an island. No mm-hmm. man is an island. We depend on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we recognize that when we go out there, you have to remain the professional. Persons are going to react in the manner in which they are accustomed to or based on the stress that is affecting them. They don't know any better. But you knowing better, you have to remain the constant professional. You're supposed to carry out a duty, and you have to carry out that duty to the best of your ability.
Right.
At the end of the day, what it is that you're trying to save property. As you heard me said earlier, you will risk a lot to save a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You will risk little to save if it's beyond help and beyond what we can do for it, then you need to focus on who you can save, who you can make better off. It's not every house that we can save as much as we would like to. There are so many factors that impact that. One, the time of the call. Persons see or witness events going on and they try to fix it before calling us. And by the time that they called, 3, 5, 6 minutes later, as I said, a fire doubles in size every 30 seconds. So when you get there, you're constantly fighting, 5 minutes have gone. It is not at the stage where it would have started. You're not dealing, and just like there are stages for a child, an embryo, there are also different stages for a fire. By the time we get that call, the fire is already well developed. It's a working fire. So when we get there, most we can try to do contain the fire, stop it from spreading to other exposures and such like. But at the end of the day, persons need to recognize that they also have a responsibility. As soon as the incident occurs, call the fire service. 311. Stop trying to take all the videos and all the pictures and calling this body and say, you the call fire down here. The time you talk to make that call, you could have called the fire service 311. Report that. Then you get off the phone with the dispatch person. Then you could go and you could broadcast like you are the social media
correspondent for the area. I want to thank you guys for spending this Sunday afternoon with us, as you always do, taking your time off from your various schedules, praising your God, and you know, talking to your neighbor and making sure that your will is in order. Any final words of advice as we head off to enjoy, I don't know, a Sunday meal or trip to the beach or exercise or sleep? Something that's very important, I suppose, for you as well as us, as we try to combat these very, very tough days. Final words from you, sir.
Right. I just wanted to add to what Ford was saying. She said when we get to the incident, but even before that, I'm going to appeal to the public, those who drive on the road. For us, any emergency vehicle to get to the scene, please, once you see the beacons flashing, even if you don't hear the siren, you're supposed to pull to the left and let the vehicles pass.
Pull to the left and stop.
And stop. Yeah. Everything on stop.
Yeah. I keep wondering why someone would look at a big, huge red vehicle behind them. That could only be a fire engine, and decide that there must be the escort. I don't know why. You know, they just will not move. But yeah, I support you in that, because I keep saying to people, you know, what if it is your house burning and you're obstructing the fire engine? I mean, how would you feel when you finally let it pass, you drive up to your house and you see your possessions in ashes and you are the one keeping the fire engine back? I mean, come on, guys. Let's be serious.
It's not just that, because just last week they had a video circulating with an ambulance trying to respond. And over 30 minutes of the video, you're seeing it driving behind a line of traffic and
nobody's moving.
Everybody refused to pull over. So that's not just the fire service, for all emergency services. Once you hear the siren, you see the beacon flashing, pull to the left and stop. Complete stop, not a rolling stop.
I love that. Thank you very much, fire prevention officers and safety officers. Give me the right name again. I've been away for too long.
Fire and life safety officers.
Thank you very much. Sobers and the team of Natasha and my good friend, it is always good to see you again, Jason. You guys still say the chorus. We still sing as a choir at the end. My descant may be not as good as, you know, Krista J's soprano, but we can try it, right? We all say what it is. Fire prevention is our intention. I think we'll get it eventually. Thank you, Jason, Natasha, and Brother Sobers. Do have a wonderful afternoon from the team here. This has been the 311 Radio Show. We're glad you can join us. And of course, we look forward to having you again with us next week when we make sure that you stay safe wherever you are. Have a blessed afternoon.
one row.